Hi, this is Gord Wilson, and you're listening to the Sens Call-Ups.
I'm Gary Bettman, and you're listening to the Sens Call-Ups.
No, because I never want the words, "I'm Gary Bettman," to come out of my pie hole, because I'm not, and I never want to be anything like him. And I'm pretty sure he's not.
Even if you don't do it as, "I'm Gary Bettman."
Bettman, you said butt.
I'm glad I hit record here.
I was fairly certain you would. Welcome to the Welcome, everyone, to the Sens Call-Ups, episode number 5 for Wednesday, November 28th, 2012. The lockout's still running, but we haven't declared a moratorium on podcasting. We just decided to take a break for a while because there wasn't much to talk about. I'm Cardinal. I'm here with my buds Canuck and Pan. Gents, haven't seen you in a little while since the little get-together at the Big Rig. Have your thoughts changed, or is everything still pretty much the same?
Well, I think I'm a little bit less hopeful now, but
it's hard to be less hopeful than I was, but I think I'm in the same boat. Canuck, how about you?
I think I'm sick of the whole lockout crap, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, the forums are still running at sensunderground.com. You can contact us at podcast@senscallups.com. You can follow us on Twitter @senscallups. Even if there isn't much going on, we still have to hear from you guys, so please feel free to drop us a line with your thoughts about what's going on, or what you think should be going on, or what's happening, or what should be happening, anything like that. Love to hear from you. Of course, the big topic for tonight is going to be what's happening with collective bargaining, or what's not happening. I'm sure we have some different opinions sitting around our table tonight. Pan's talking to us via Skype, so hopefully everything will work out properly. But around this table, we certainly are going to have some interesting discussion, I think, over what's going on with the CBA right now. There have been a lot
I'm in my jammies.
That's more information than I need to know, and yeah, probably more than the listeners need to.
Can you turn off your video, please, Pan? We don't want to see that.
No. I certainly don't want that mental image, no. No. There have been a lot of comments in the media, obviously, over the past 2.5 months, maybe even 3, about what's going on with the CBA, and there's certainly a lot of sniping going on from both sides. One side possibly more than the other. The other one is just snide, maybe. I don't know how you want to term it, but it's certainly a lot of commentary from the player side, whether it's from the union representatives or the players, while it's really only it's only Bettman or Daly from the NHL side, except for the occasional quote, or in air quotes, misquote from owners, etc., that seems to be coming out. I don't know about you guys. I'm just really tired of listening to all the rhetoric. I'd like them to declare a moratorium on talking to the media. Get some work done, but I'm not interested in hearing any more of the garbage that we've been hearing these days. I don't know about you.
And all the news, Ottawa Sun reporters, and I'm sure others have been interviewing Alfie lately, and he's using the expression "pissed off." I mean, it's not just us. I think everybody's pissed off at this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, this is really one of our hobbies. That's these guys' life.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I was kind of surprised because I mean, Alfie's been usually a pretty, I don't want to say, you know, PG or clean cut, but I mean, to hear him actually say that he's pissed off about what's going on, I found that, you know, it was an interesting sort of window into his character. Not that he doesn't have one, but that's not the side of him you usually see. He's usually really positive, no matter how much the team was struggling, he was usually looking at the positives that were going on and the things that were being worked on, and to hear a comment like that was really negative.
Well, wasn't he a player rep before?
Yeah, he was.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is he was pretty much going to retire, and he made that difficult decision. No, I'm going to come back. I'm going to help this young team for another year at least. And then this happens. I mean, geez.
Well, as a Sens fan, that's one of the things that's really, really getting under my skin with this whole lockout is if this costs me the last season of watching Alfie play in an Ottawa Senators uniform, that's not something I'm going to forgive very easily.
You can tell how much it's bothering us fans. I mean, this is old news, but it's still like fresh to us, right?
For sure. For sure. Because it's what matters to us. I mean, more than the, you know, who gets how much of what pie and how things are divided up and what rights are going on. I mean, that's I know that's part of the discussion, but does it matter to me? No. What matters to me? Come to a decision, get on the ice. That's what matters to me. And I don't know about you guys, but have you seen any movement in this? I've seen a little bit of movement, but so little, it's just pathetic. It's like, there was a great analogy a little while ago. And I can't remember who it was. I think it was actually Roy McGregor, you know, Hall of Fame writer, who said, you know, it's pathetic that we have grown-ups who can't figure out how to divide a pie that's worth $3 billion. If I gave a popsicle to two kindergarten kids, they'd figure out how to divide it before it melted.
Yeah, no kidding. It's all posturing right now. It's trying to play the other guy as the bad guy, and the fans aren't buying it.
But that doesn't achieve anything.
Nope. Does nothing.
At least, I don't know about you, but I mean, for me as a fan, that doesn't achieve anything. It's not getting it any closer to a solution, which is, as a fan, what I care about. I want a solution. I don't want it to be a one-sided solution, but I want a solution, and I want it to happen, and nobody seems to be doing anything about making it happen. It's all finger-pointing and, you know, name-calling and everything else. I think it's just ridiculous, quite frankly.
I think there's been some steps going back and forth, but there's a couple key things. It's a whole make-whole thing. That I don't really understand.
No.
Is that the... like the max 5-year contract or something like that they just want to cancel out old years? Or
I think make whole, and correct me if I'm wrong on this one, I think it's to do with the whole of paying the full value of contracts that are signed.
You right.
Know, if I signed a contract which is paying me $6 million a year, you can't say to me, because it's going from 57 to 50, well, now you're only getting, instead of $6 million a year, you're only getting 5.45 or whatever it is. I think that's where the make whole thing is sitting.
Okay.
And I think it got clouded, and because I got confused with a little while about there was talk at the beginning of the lockout about, you know, full payment for this season even if part of it was missed. And that's kind of fallen by the wayside, which I'm happy about, just like the whole claims about, well, this offer is off the table if we don't get a full 82-game schedule in, and if we don't get 82-game schedule in, then we have to completely re-examine the money for, you know, for every year in this collective bargain agreement, which I thought was very odd. You know, what would, you know, so if you get a 60-game schedule this year, so what? What does that have to do with an 82-game schedule next year? Nothing. Why are you tying these two things together? So there was a lot of, I don't know about you, but for me, there was a lot of spin and tangents and very peculiar angles of looking at this to start it out. Now it's kind of coming a little clear, but it's getting cloudy again with the whole concept of decertification, which I have to admit I've read some on, but I certainly don't really know enough to talk about on the whole, because it's a big, big, big question.
That almost sounds like you're blowing up the league pretty much if you do that. Wow.
Yeah, that could be suicidal. From what I understand about it, I don't know if you can bounce around on the list here, but because decertification is basically the players removing themselves from the player union.
That's right.
And so what happened? Yeah, so it's like you're no longer unionized employees. So the whole antitrust thing is that because the teams have, it's kind of like an oligopoly, they can't do price fixing. So in regards to having, for example, salary cap. Yeah. So now you're limiting in regards to how much people are making under those rules, which they're protected against under the with the CBA having a union represented and everyone agreeing to it.
Yes.
So what would happen is, if without a union, if let's say the owners say, okay, it's a free market and everyone can do things, but just amongst yourselves, we'll say, you know what, we won't sign people past 5 years. We won't pay them more than this amount. Because that's really kind of being a cartel. And that's the part that would be illegal.
Huh.
So that's what I understand of decertification, because it's just blowing everything up and then trying to go back to the league and kind of reformat everything. That, and I think, what's his name? The number two for the NHL. What's his name? I can't remember.
Daly.
Yeah.
Because he said, you know what? This would just be suicide, and it'll absolutely wipe out at least this year. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah. It's clearly a posturing thing at this point.
Yeah.
Everybody's sick of the lockout talk, but maybe we should take a couple minutes here and just kind of, clarify a few things. Because I think, even if you listen back to some of our earlier episodes, you know, the kind of question is, well, whose side are we on? And I think everybody's flipped and flopped. And, there's a segment. I wouldn't mind taking a moment. There's one thing that I still see fans here and there getting mixed up, is this hockey-related revenue and the percentages, 50-something. And one thing we should probably take a moment and clear up and make sure I'm correct on it as well. You know, they're talking about the 50-50% or the 43 and the 57 and all that sort of stuff. All those percentages aren't talking about here's the money made by the NHL and you get a cut of it. It's talking about their salaries, right? And I think that's one thing I was mixed up. I think people were looking at that and they're thinking, okay, the player's getting his salary and he's getting a percentage of the revenue. And no, that's not what they're talking about. I was confused on that for a little bit. No, they're talking about their salary, period. And their salary makes up X percent of the revenue. Is that correct? I got the right understanding there?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
It's about setting where the cap is based on what the total revenue is.
Right. And the reason why I want to just take a moment and clarify that, because I read a lot of comments like on TSN and in the forums and not so much the Sens Underground forums, but certainly TSN, and people are confused. They're getting this idea that, okay, well, the player's getting a salary. Now he's demanding a percentage of his revenue. So, their argument's kind of like this. Hey, I go to work at my employer. I get my salary. I don't get a cut of the revenue as well, unless that's a commission thing. So just be thankful. And so when they're talking about percentages, they're talking about their salary. So this whole 50-50, 43, 57, that's all talking about the salary cap of the league. So it is their salaries.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's an uninformed opinion if they're coming off with something like that. But
well, yeah. It was confusing when they started. I get that. And depending on how much attention you want to pay to all this junk going around, I could understand getting confused there.
Well, yeah. There's certainly a lot of misinformation being thrown around, or certainly a lot of spin on a certain point of view from both sides. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They're certainly twisting. There's certainly a lot of number twisting and position twisting to suit a particular point of view.
And when I started, and I think we said this before, I immediately thought the owners are ridiculous, because here they are, in the last CBA, they fought and they got what they wanted. The players seemingly conceded, and they got their cap. And now they can't say they can't work under their own system. And we ridiculed them, and you almost kind of feel to go into the players. But I'm upset at the players too. I think everybody is. There's no sides anymore. I'm upset at both of them. And here's the deal. So the owners, I'm upset at you because you negotiated this deal and it didn't work for you, mostly because of the deals that you signed as owners, or you let your GM sign, the people you hired, and now you don't want anymore. Okay. There's that. But let's take a step back and we think, okay, well, let's look at the economic times. It's a recession. Let's say, in good faith, you made that arrangements, and in legit 7 years later, it's just not working. That could happen. Okay, fine. But, So it's not about salary anymore. They're not just talking about salary. Now they want to demand on players, well, you know, 5 years minimum only. We need to have, you know, no more, you know, change the eligibility on when you're a free agent. Like, wait a second here, guys. That has nothing to do with the revenues. That's all to do with, you know, you getting your way again. And for that, shame on you. And the players, you know, everybody looks at the situation and think, okay, you're making millions of dollars. I don't go to my employer and I say, well, you had a good year last year. I want a raise. Tough. I've signed to work at this company. I get what I get. If I don't like it, I go elsewhere. So I'm just sick at both of them. I don't know. I think everybody can probably agree with that statement.
Well, yeah, but you're saying that, like, you signed me for this much, you did well, I want more. I think the converse of that and what's going on now is you signed me for this much, now you're telling me that you want me to take less or exactly. The potential of less.
Yeah, and I think that's where I think that's one of the big sticking points is, and I mean, that's where the whole make whole thing is coming in. It's because I believe, and I'm sure we'll get corrected if I'm wrong on this, rather than going directly to 50% right now, there was a declining scale down to 50% based on an estimate of increasing revenue, so that, and this was one of the players, one of the proposals the Players Association put forward, saying we're willing to get to 50% of revenue, but, you know, to do it right away is going to cost us money. So we're willing to get there, but on a sliding scale, going down into, I think it was year three or year four, we'll get to 50%, and that will also protect all the contracts that have already been signed. So we'll get there, but we're also not willing to, you know, take a cut on the contracts that have already been signed, which you signed in good faith, to get there right away, because you can't control yourselves and stay within the system which you demanded during the last collective bargaining agreement, and then spent the next 7 years trying to figure out a way to get around for your own advantage. And I guess that's where my opinion really falls in. I'm not really for one side or the other, but I find it really tiresome that we're looking at a situation which is created out of a situation that was supposed to fix it. I know that sounds a little convoluted, but, you know, the last CBA was supposed to fix the problem, and the last 7 years have been finding a ways around the fix to get what you want, and now we need to fix that too.
It's ridiculous.
Well, who's to blame for that one?
Exactly.
If my employer came to me and said, you know, instead of paying you $5 million a year, I'm going to pay you $8 million a year for the first 4 years of your contract and $500,000 for the next two, when you're probably not going to be with me anyway, I'll say, well, let's see. I just made an extra, you know, $4-5 million out of this contract. Okay. Well, a player would be foolish to say no to that.
Yeah.
But you can't blame the player for that situation arising, where an owner signs that contract with those last 2 years at league minimum to bring the salary cap down. It makes no sense to blame the player for that. So
yeah, this negotiation really should have just been fine tuning.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I can't believe that it's almost December now and still not done.
And so many of the other things that have been brought up, which were, you know, they were fixes in the last one, that now it's like, well, we're going to get here and we're going to take all these things and throw them all in as well. It's like, why are you opening this Pandora's box of all these things that, and I'm saying this, you know, it's the owners who are saying, well, we want this, 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 and 43%. Well, maybe we'll come up a little bit on 43, maybe to 50-50, but to get to 50-50, you have to give up all these other things which we gave you in the last one when you agreed to the salary cap in the first place. Well, is it any wonder that the players' union's a bit intractable on this? Because the players' union is looking at it going, well, what's in it for us? This is all give, but there's no take. And yes, you own the business, but, you know, negotiation is a back and forth, not a back.
They're not negotiating. They're just...
Exactly.
Here's it or leave it.
This is our best offer. And if I've heard Bettman say that once, I must have heard 20 sound bites over 6 weeks. This is our best offer. We're willing to talk. You know, we want to continue this. But he's never, to my knowledge, I have never heard him say the word negotiate. He said conversations. He said talks. But he's also said, this is our best offer. And then, you know, basically, until you come to our best offer, there's really nothing to talk about.
The media has its own slant on this.
Oh, and, yeah, big time.
Of course. But it, did you not get the scenario or get the vibe that it seemed like when Bill Daly and not Donald Fair, but it's
Stephen
Fair were actually talking, it actually felt, at least the way the reports were coming in, that progress is getting made. So, and well, then once the big guys come in, it's like, no.
Well, I think that, you know, there's been a lot of slagging on both of them. And I think they're both Donald Fair and Gary Bettman are big egos. I think they both have really big egos because they've never lost. They're used to winning, just like the owners are used to winning and aren't particularly interested in being flexible. And players are, well, players are by their very nature. They're competitive. They're used to winning. They don't play for ties, right? And I think that Bettman and Fear have, their ego gets in the way of doing the right thing to actually get this solved. And I think they're both to blame, and I think that's why Bill Daly and Stephen Fear are probably the ones in the background who are going to get this done eventually. I'd like it to be tomorrow, but... Yeah.
And what's so ridiculous, too, is the clampdown in effect. Like, you know, these owners come out and they say different things, and, you know, maybe we can talk about some of them, but, like, even just the example locally of Eugene Melnyk, and he came out, and what was his comments? So basically saying, we should be playing hockey right now. And he gets, what, did he get slapped on the wrist? He got fined for that.
Yeah, exactly.
We should be playing hockey right now. Really? That's controversial?
Owner.
Really?
Yeah, that's an owner, but he's talking like a fan.
Exactly.
And I didn't see, what's your opinion on this? I didn't see that as going, you know, that's not talking about, you know, what's going on. That's not voicing an opinion on the negotiations. That's a guy who happens to own a hockey team, but who's also a fan going, we should be playing hockey now. You know, we should. This is a problem. And he gets slapped for it. I mean, it's kind of the opposite of the what's come out about from, what's his name, Jacobs? First name is Jeremy, the owner of the Bruins? I can't think of his first name. Yeah. Who's apparently, and you know, I'll use the air quotes, apparently, he's one of the leaders in trying to get absolutely everything that the NHL is demanding from the players' union. He's been around a long time. He's owned that team for quite a number of years. And he's the chairman of the board of NHL owners, the executive board. So he's sort of the sitting at the table, the head of the table of 30 and the head of the table of 8 owners who basically run the league and tell Gary Bettman what to do. And he's the one who is apparently behind an awful lot of this. And there's a really interesting story that came out just the other day, which has been denied by the NHL. And other sources have come out and said, well, the NHL tells lies. It was one of their sponsors that was saying, well, we know the NHL lies from time to time. Why should this be any different? That one just came out today. I haven't had a chance to follow up too much on
it. That sounds kind of juicy.
Oh, it is. And it's been going around from a couple of different sources, but I haven't had a chance to really look into it because it only came out sort of this afternoon. But the story that came out, I think it was yesterday, was that Jeremy Jacobs, there we go, there was a meeting of the Board of Governors, and it was actually one of the representatives from the Winnipeg Jets spoke up that he was opposed to a long lookout because it was really hurting the momentum of that franchise. And the reply from Jeremy Jacobs was something along the lines of, you're a new kid on the block, and I'll let you know when you're allowed to speak in here. And the NHL has come out and denied this, but other sources have come out and said, yeah, well, they deny a lot of stuff, and that sounds pretty much like a story I heard. So I don't know if it's gold, but it's probably some sort of semi-precious metal.
Yeah, that's Jeez. Lots of ego right there.
Oh, exactly. And he's also, his team has won a Stanley Cup recently. And in the list that came out today from Forbes about the most valuable teams in the league, Boston was right up at the top. It wasn't at the top. That's the Toronto Maple Leafs, which I think includes all of MLSE, which is why it's so valuable. Everyone's going, well, how can they be more valuable than everybody else? Well, MLSE is not just...
Well, I think the Maple Leafs are probably the biggest brand.
The Maple Leafs are probably still making money right now, and they're not even playing hockey.
Yep.
Yeah, true. But, you know, Boston would be right up there. And, I mean, he's been around a long time, and he's, you know, he's a very wealthy man. And, I don't begrudge that. I don't deny it. He's used to getting his own way. But it's really, I don't think that sort of action, which if it's true, and I mean, it's, you know, a bit of a he said, she said, but there have been a lot of sources who've been quoting it and saying, well, it sounds about right. I wasn't there, but it sounds about right.
So I think he just wants Tim Thomas's contract to expire.
Well, he's got, that could be it. It's, but I just find him so, I find that positioning to be so in contrast, so completely contrasting to Eugene Melnyk. We should be playing hockey. You know, simple comment. We should be playing hockey. And it's not, and we're not. And
somehow that's a bad comment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, you know, I made the joke about Toronto, and I know we all agree the Leafs suck and that sort of thing. But, I mean, are we surprised that they're the most profitable franchise and that they're making money hands over fist? I mean, Toronto is the largest city in Canada. Canada is a hockey-crazed country. I mean, that part doesn't surprise me.
Oh, not at all.
The Leafs still suck, but, you know.
Maybe. So do their fans, but they make a lot of money.
But the brand sure doesn't.
Yeah.
The brand is a good investment. Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Well, I mean, we can talk about it, but I'm so sick of the back and forth thing and the whole lockout. And I mean, I'm looking at the effects of what the lockout could be.
Well, wasn't Snyder someone that spoke up on this too? Or?
Well, there was a lot of commentary and denial. Ed Snyder is the owner of the Phillies,
right?
And
Flyers, yeah.
Flyers, yeah.
Thank Flyers, you. Sorry. Yeah, Phillies baseball. Philadelphia. I always get them backwards.
How about them Eagles?
Hey, the Eagles, the Phillies have won a game more recently than the Eagles.
That's true.
Good thing I'm a Packers fan. Anyway.
You a cheesehead?
Yeah, I'd rather be a cheesehead. You know, there was after that comment came out from the alleged comment from Snyder about, you know, this is the deal we're going to get. Why are we dragging this out? There was a rebuttal that came out that, you know, Snyder isn't upset and he's frustrated with what's going on. And the quote from me was erroneous and I'm a solid supporter and all this other stuff. It was such a vehement denial that I'm looking at it going, if it's not true, why are you protesting so much that somebody said this? Unless you're trying to avoid a fine.
Yeah. Well, if Melnyk gets fined for saying we should be playing hockey, you can only imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't want to get fined, so I'll protest it. But I just found it, maybe he is. And if that's the case, maybe the big telling point will be the Board of Governors meeting that's coming up on the, is it the 5th of December? There's a Board of Governors where all the owners are getting together. And maybe something will come out of that. But the problem is the 8-23 rule.
Yep. And if it would be majority rules, it would be over.
But the majority has to be 23. That's the problem. As long as 8 owners support what the NHL is doing, that's considered unanimous support. It has to be 23.
So it's got to be the commissioner plus a third.
Well, it has to be. A third. It only has to be 7 teams because the NHL owns Phoenix right now.
What kind of legal nonsense is that? 8 people out of 30, and that's unanimous.
Exactly. Well, my question is, why did the owners pass this as a bylaw within the NHL? It's something that Gary Bettman put forward years ago. And they said, yeah, okay, that's fine.
A smart, clever man.
Well, he's very clever. I won't deny him that. But what kind of, I mean, the team owners, as a rule, I would expect, are successful businessmen and reasonably intelligent. You know, Coolis owning Tampa Bay notwithstanding. That was a few years ago, and he lost that team because he didn't have any money. But, you know, as a rule, I would imagine that owners of NHL teams are reasonably intelligent. And to look at a rule, oh yes, well, only 8 of you have to support the commissioner, and that's considered unanimous, but 23 of you have to get together to oppose him. 23 out of 30?
Yeah.
That's like a feudal...
That's an uprising.
Well, that's a feudal baronial system. You know, you're never going to get that kind of agreement going on, so nothing's going to happen. It's insane.
Did you see that, a bit of a tangent here, but you see the player, maybe someone can remind me of the name. It was on Twitter. He retweeted a statement that some random fan made, basically saying that I'd like to see Bettman dead or something like that.
That was Jeff O'Neill,
former
Toronto Maple Leaf, who said, I want to make a hole in Bettman's effing head.
Yeah.
Like, make hole, and then he deleted it.
And it wasn't the player that said it. He just retweeted it.
He just retweeted it.
He retweets
everything.
He said it himself. It wasn't a retweet.
You sure?
He tweeted it himself, because then he deleted it after a bunch of other people started retweeting it.
I thought he retweeted it.
Oh, I heard it was a retweet of someone that... Anyways, write it or you...
What kind of idiot?
Pan, I get the sense you want to move on here.
Well, I guess I'm looking at this lockout, and I mean, I mentioned it earlier that if it costs me my last chance to see Daniel Alfredsson play, I'm going to be really, really pissed to the point where I'm not sure when the next time I'll be at Scotiabank Place for a game is. And I say that completely honestly.
God, well, I don't want to be the guy that casts doom and gloom. And at this point, it's pretty much the betting average. I mean, I think we've seen the end of the season. I think it has to happen before like mid-December, before the season to be salvaged at some short season state.
Absolutely.
And I don't think people want to award the Stanley Cup to a short season. So I officially declare this NHL season to be the Walking Dead. And if you don't know that theme song, that's the theme song for The Walking Dead.
Well, I don't, but I figured that's what it was. Yeah, I think you're right, because when did the NBA sign their agreement? Because they started just around Christmas, didn't they?
Boxing Day, I think.
Boxing Day, yeah. So, I mean, they'd have to sign it really... I have to sign it in early December to get the NHL going then. And if they don't, then it's over. And the last lockout, when you look, I was looking back, and you know the players who we didn't see play again because of the last lockout, and there's some pretty heavy names there. Ron Francis, Al MacInnis, Scott Stevens, Messier, Adam Oates, and Vincent Damphousse. Those are some pretty big names. And if we don't get a season this year, and the players that are of that sort of age all decide to retire, it wouldn't be only Daniel Alfredsson. It would be also players like Patrick Eliash, Sergei Gonchar. Love him or hate him as a Senator, but I mean, he's still been a great player for a lot of years.
Brodeur.
Brodeur's
Jager.
Got a 2 year, I think.
But he still could retire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can always retire.
Yeah. Jager, Solani. I mean, Solani's what, 42?
Two, yep.
Yeah. I mean, these are some amazing names that have all signed contracts for this year or this year and next year, but
Ginla's contract's up too.
Yeah. And if all these guys retire, not only does it cost me as a fan the chance to see them play, and I mean, watching some of these players play is pretty special, but if any of these teams are a small market team, you know, like Jager's in Colorado this year, is he not? Signed in Colorado, who are a rebuilding
Dallas.
Team. Dallas,
yeah.
Sorry. I knew it was one of the southern teams like that. Rebuilding team, trying to get their fan base to come back. That could really hurt them.
No, I don't think Jager's a big point in that, but I see where you're going with. I think from the list you've got here, Patrick Eliash is a big one.
Solani in...
Solani's secondary scoring, but the Devils have taken a big loss with... what's his face? Signed in Minnesota. Going to lose that guy and Eliash in the same year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
That team's already struggling, so who knows?
Yep, it's true. It's true. And I look at that and go, you know, that's as a fan, it hurts me, but it's also the team's hurting themselves by doing this. And I mean, they are hurting themselves by not having this season. And they're saying, oh, well, we're losing $18 to $20 million a day. Well, it's the NHL that's complaining they're losing $18 to $20 million a day. It's the NHL that initiated the lockout.
And actually, one thing that I looked at, I didn't do all my homework, but just one player that I looked at on our team is Spezza. This year is supposed to make $8 million. The next year, $5 million. Next year, $4 million. You know what? That actually becomes a movable contract. He's got his no trade. Sissian's going to hate that I'm saying this.
Are we talking trade Spezza again?
Why are we talking trade Spezza?
No, but just because he signed this contract for the whole make whole thing. He's expecting to get $8 million this year. And instead, he's just going to get $5 million and $4 million.
Yeah.
He's getting ripped off.
Oh, I see your point. Yeah.
I see where you're going with that. For sure. For sure. And, you know, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Like, I'm so sick of listening to it in the media. And I'm so sick of listening to it, you know, when I say media, I mean television, radio, print, on the internet. I think I'm probably the only person I know who hasn't been blocked by Alan Walsh so in my personal account. I
guess. Sorry, so Puddle Duck.
But some of the stuff that he's been writing, I mean, I have to say that once in a while he makes an interesting point, but most of it is just like, oh man, give it a rest, give it a rest. Just one last thing, before we go off this topic, there was an interesting tweet I saw recently about, you know, what happens after this. You know, what do we do when we eventually go back, when there eventually is hockey again? What are fans going to do? Are they going to cancel their season tickets? Are they going to go to fewer, you know, one-off games where they just buy tickets if they're not a season seat holder? You know, is there any way that I guess it came out of is there any way we can get revenge? You know, even if we're going to a game, you know, how can I mean, I want to go to a game, but I don't want to give them all my money.
This is a good topic, actually. And I wonder about it because I as much as I would like to say, and I see a lot of fans trying to say it, and they're trying their best, and I get it. They're like, I'm done with the NHL. I'm done. I think we all deep down know that we like the game too much.
Yeah.
But you know what I like to see? Someone suggested this idea. I think it was in TSN forums, and it probably other areas, is how about take the first 10 games after the season starts and don't go to them? That would take an effort, but I could do that. Yeah. You know, I could see that. 10 games, okay, we can deal with that. And we're just watching on TV, but...
There was actually somebody who was just saying, for the even just the home opener, nobody go to their team's home opener. Yeah. Especially if it's televised.
Can you imagine? I mean, there'll always be the media. There'll always be people that will go. It'll be like a Phoenix game.
or a Panthers game.
How do we fans make a statement? I see... You know what? One thing I do see solidarity on is not buying the merchandise right now, despite all the sales that are on. Like, I walked into Sports Experts the other day, and I got a met right by the front cash. There was these nice hats, toques actually, with the Senators Heritage logo, and they were pretty cheap. And I thought about it, and it's like, no, I'm not doing it.
Well, where are you going to wear it to?
I'm going to feel embarrassed wearing it right now. Yep. And I don't want to give you money right now.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm not buying any merchandise. I'm certainly not wearing anything. I'm not wearing a Senator's any paraphernalia.
Oh.
Ever.
I don't know. It's not that I'm ashamed to wear a Senator's thing. I think the most things I have are just jerseys, so it's probably not appropriate to wear something like that right now anyway, because there's no frigging games on. But
nowhere to go wear it to, exactly.
But I'm certainly not going to go and buy something right now, like, give me a break.
I saw one interesting tweet, which was, I don't exactly know who this person was. It was somebody else had been retweeting them. And they said, if 5,000 fans going to a game, so at every game that's played, if 5,000 fans spend $5 less on food, which, what can you buy for $5? A slice of pie?
A pizza or something?
You know, maybe a small hot dog at Scotiabank Place is $4.25. Which, for a 67s game, which I was out there for recently, is ridiculous. There were $2, maybe $2.50 at the Civic Center. And to now I could go for a couple of dogs. $4.25? I'm going to stay hungry. Forget that. But if 5,000 fans per game spend $5 less on food, and they were using it based on an entire season, so $5 for 5 fans at 30 arenas for 41 home games. And that's a small number. I mean, capacity at Scotiabank Place is 19,000. So that's almost one fan in four not buying a slice of pie. That's not my music. That's Pan's music. Oh, I'm doing
that. You're taking over.
You're taking over. Yeah.
I'm taking over your deal. I'm sorry.
All the white people trying to take over all the time.
All us white people look the same anyway, right? So.
So $5 for 5,000 fans at every arena for 41 home games. That's almost $31 million. Now, that's not all hockey-related revenue, but I'm sure that the teams get a cut of that. So even if they get a quarter of that, that's suddenly $8 million they don't have per team, for every team in the league. That'd be kind of cool.
I'm starting to get the feeling that there's not a darn thing we can do to make a difference on this, and that they're just going to end up shooting themselves in the foot anyways.
Well, you know what? We've got actually an email here.
Give her.
There it is. Because emails make sounds. Anyways. So this is from Ian Taylor. Now, guys, remember, I do read like an 8-year-old, so just bear with me. All right. Howdy, boys. As I write this, it's now day 52 of the NHL lockout. I recently came to the conclusion that I'm paying Rogers $70 a month to not watch hockey. So this past Sunday, I called up and canceled my cable.
Good job.
It's not much, but there's little else I can do to show my displeasure and discuss with the NHL owners and players union. I can pick up CBC over that air. So I'll still be able to catch the Sens when they play on Saturdays. Once again, they're going to start those nights. But I'm not getting Sportsnet or TSN anymore. What does this mean? Well, once this league gets their heads out of their asses and ends the lockout, I'll be watching a lot less hockey. I won't be following my team as closely. I won't be as invested in the season. I'll be way less likely to buy tickets and drive from Orleans to Canada for a game. Long story short, I'm out. I could probably count on one hand the number of games I haven't watched since the 04-05 lockout ended. And if I'm this frustrated and disinterested, then the fans in the States are gone. Bettman has screwed this league. If the NHL ever gets a new commissioner, maybe I'll check back in. If there's one thing I can take solace in, it is that the Leafs do, and always will, suck. Ian.
Solid.
Thanks, Ian.
Well said, Ian.
That was good. You know what? Let's just go around between the three of us. When hockey comes back, not if, when, denial. Canuck, are you going to be different towards the game?
I think it's going to be pretty hard to not be interested in it on some level, but it sure has taken a hit, you know. And am I going to be run out and buy the ticket to go to some meaningless game? Probably not. It's going to have to be a reason. It's going to have to be like, you know, Alfie's last game or the Alfie banner rising or something that's going to have to draw me back in. I'll get drawn back in. I'm not going to be an idiot about it. I like hockey. I'll watch it. But I think I agree with Ian. I think, you know, if we Canadian hardcore fans are feeling this way, some of this U.S. market is just going to give up, including, and I'm thinking of the L.A. Stanley Cup champions, you know, the people they would have won over. Hey, we're the champions. Come watch us. Oh, okay. Forget that. Let's go back to baseball.
Yep. Cardinal, I think you've pretty much voiced yourself on this.
I'll try and keep it short.
We got to go to a break now. No.
I'd say the same thing. It's actually going to – it'll take something significant to get me back out to Scotiabank Place for a Senators game. I'll follow them on radio, on television, in this podcasting world for sure. But to actually get me to spend my own money on attending a game, it'll take something special because I'm soured on it, to be honest. I can enjoy it just as much without having to be there. The in-game to draw me back into the in-game experience is going to take something significant, and it's unfortunate, but I've got other outlets for hockey. I've been following Binghamton. I've been following the 67s. The World Juniors are coming up. I got lots of hockey. You know, the Senators are now competing for my hockey attention. rather than being the number one focus of it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we do have a guest caller. By the way, guys, maybe we should start a Walking Dead podcast. What do you think about that?
Yep. More brains.
You've been watching The Walking Dead, right, Pan?
Absolutely. Oh my God, it's such
a great
show.
Where they left off too. What a great season they're having right now, right?
Yep. Just shocking. Spoilers, but it's shocking.
Yeah. Cardinal, you watching this too?
Nope.
No, and not your kind of thing, or what?
Doesn't interest me.
And what kind of shows do you watch?
I'm more into either something that's actual real, like sports, or something that that interests me, whether it's, like, it can be anything from a drama like CSI, or, I mean, I'm a big fan of even reruns of something like MASH would be more interesting. I'm not into the whole zombie thing. The whole other extra world has never interested me.
So drama or sports?
Yeah. Which some people would say would be the same thing, yes. I understand
so
that.
So you're pretty much a big fan of Friday Night Lights.
And we're back. Sorry about Pan, we cut you off there. We went to break and didn't give you a chance to voice your thoughts about what you were feeling about when hockey does come back eventually.
I want to play too, guys. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, so with that, when the NHL comes back, I've been a season ticket holder for I think 3 years now. Wow. NHL, you had me at hello.
So you're back in full force, that's it?
I'm back in. I'm not canceling my tickets. They're giving me 5% back on it, so that's actually pretty good.
Maybe one free parking ticket, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know what else I'm going to get. Hopefully I'm going to try to get some swag out of there so that I can pass that off to some of the listeners and some other contests that I've got in my mind. So you guys will benefit from it.
But, Gonchar jersey.
Now, so
yeah, Reality is sending you a Gonchar jersey.
Now, are they going to refund the amount, like however X number of games canceled? Like, if there is a season starting in January, let's say, they'll refund you the amount from October to end of December, or do they just put that into an account for next year?
So I think what's going to happen is I've got the half season tickets.
Okay.
So I get the 21 games. So I would normally get half the home games. I think what they'll do is I'll still get 21 games. So I might actually end up going to all the home games with the reduced schedule, but I won't have. So the thing is that they'll probably want to move us to a different section or area of what they'll consider an equivalent value.
Right.
But being the size of a 10-year-old, I'm right on row A. 319. Shout out to Red Scarf Union there. Anyway.
Nice.
So with that, what we're probably going to try to do is move down or something, or just try to get something going that way to get us better tickets, because I'm not moving up in the rows.
I don't think you understand.
I had to go to the playoffs, but...
To fix the revenue problem, ticket prices are going up. So your equivalent seat will be in row double Z, right at the back, standing.
Standing. Yeah, nice.
Behind the tall guy.
Of course.
Nice.
Anyways, but yeah, they've got me. I've got my own little rituals, and I'm superstitious that way. So.
Oh, no, that's cool. I mean.
Totally got me, so they've got my money. So
I always put my mustard on the left side and ketchup on the right.
I actually put none.
On your 425 hot dogs?
Yeah.
Sorry. Ridiculous. No, yep. No, that's cool. I mean, everybody's different.
One of the things I do when I go there is I always wash my hands with cold water.
Well, at least you're washing them.
Ooh. Zing.
Yeah, they're supposed to have that fixed, actually. The women's are supposed to have been done, I think, for this season, and the men's are going to take an extra year. Did you hear why that's like that? I actually found out why that's like that.
Didn't the Sens Underground have Cyril Leader on there and explain that?
Yeah, that's where it was. I was trying to remember where it came from. Yeah, because it was designed by somebody who didn't understand the concept of cold water because they live in a southern climate. Brilliant.
My question too is, since they have no games there, are they going to pave the freaking parking lot?
Well, the 67s are still playing there.
Yeah, but how many games? Really? They play Thursday, Friday, Saturdays mostly, though, right?
Nope. Could you Tuesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Okay, so you've got Wednesday, Thursday to get it to at least do it in sections? They don't use the whole parking lot either, I don't think.
Fill it anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't fill it. I've been to a bunch of 67s games, and I think the biggest one I've been to was about 7K, which is nothing in that building. It's like being at a Florida Panthers game or a Phoenix Coyotes game or an Islanders game. But
anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a guest. We have a guest listener who emailed us, and we liked their email, so we decided to bring him on. This is Boingy. And let's get him on the line now.
All right, so here we've got Boingy on with us. Boingy, I hope you appreciated your little theme song there.
Love it.
Great. So, yeah, you wanted to join us. I think how long have you been a groundhog for?
Not that long, actually. I really just discovered the Ascend Underground towards the end of last year. For whatever reason, it totally escaped my notice. Then I listened for most of last season. Oh, this is cool. You know, I can finally follow the Sens in a serious way here down here in Toronto where I live. And then towards the end of the season, well, guess what? We're retiring. I think my exact words are, yeah. Well, I think my exact words actually were, are you kidding me? So
nice. Yeah.
So, so about a year, and I was really thrilled to hear, really thrilled when you guys started up the call up. So I thought, oh, good. This is something that the Sens fans in exile can really use.
And now we can talk about hockey.
No kidding.
Jeez. Perfect. Yeah. So you had a couple of things going on there. And as you mentioned, so you're from Toronto. Now, how did you become a Sens fan?
Well, I grew up west of here in Kitchener, actually. But of course, that's a part of Ontario that bleeds blue and white, if you know anything about that area. But I've lived here for most of the last 20 years. I went to school here in Toronto. But I became a Sens fan because I went to grad school at Carleton. And I was there from 95 to 2002. So I was there for the first couple playoff runs. And just sort of caught the spirit and came back and just never really felt the need to let it go. And that, I'll also say, just for personal reasons, the 7 years I spent in Ottawa were easily...
Yeah, those were the really good years, too.
Seven of the best years of my life. I can honestly say that if my life were and my career were to take me back to Ottawa, I wouldn't be upset.
There you go. Awesome. Awesome. So how is it dealing with the blue douches over there?
It really depends. I mean, I'm going to be a little... choose my words a little carefully, because one of my best friends is probably going to listen to this. So if I really, really rail on Leaf fans, he'll come at me for it. But it's a little tough, just because I find, and I know there's some other hockey fans here in Toronto who share this, there's a real hockey tunnel vision here. And I think I said that in my letter to the Underground back in the spring. I find that people around here follow the Leafs and only the Leafs. They don't even keep up with what's going on in the Marlies and the AHL. They don't keep up with the juniors. Unless it's an international tournament as big as the Olympics, you don't get that many people following it. So it's a little on the tough side, and it's brutal trying to follow the Sens on TV unless you get a pretty expensive cable package. You yeah. never see them on TV unless they're playing the Leafs on the early game on Hockey Night in Canada. You never see them.
So and it's those really... are the games tend to really tank too.
No kidding. Lay an egg in front of the whole country. Yeah, that's yep. great. Yep.
Now, it's really. Are they? Go ahead, Cardinal.
I was going to say it's. I've noticed the same thing when I'm down in Toronto. Is that they're not hockey fans.
Yeah.
They're Leafs fans, but they're not hockey fans. And yes. I mean, they're not, even with a lockout in the NHL right now, they're not even selling out for the Marlies.
No, they never have sold out for the Marlies. Not even their playoff run. And they've had a couple of deep playoff runs in the last couple of years. They just don't tend to sell them out. They don't. The juniors don't do well here in the Greater Toronto Area. In fact, the Brampton Battalion. Yeah. The team which plays out in the northwestern suburbs of Toronto is leaving Brampton at the end of the season for yeah. the sunny shores of North Bay. So
yeah. to replace the Centennials who used to be up there.
Yeah, we're now
Chris Neal.
Yeah. So it is kind of a funny zone. You get this. The way I like to put it to people, and again, I don't mean to beat up on people who really are hockey fans around here, because you do find them. But I find that what it is that people around here aren't so much interested in hockey as there's this sort of tribal loyalty to a local cultural institution, and it's Leafs right or wrong, but they kind of don't pay much attention to what's going on elsewhere in the game. It's really funny that way.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
What I think we should do is take a look at the schedule, see when the Binghamton Senators are playing the Toronto Marlies, get as many Sens fans from Ottawa, go down, invade that rink, and just take it right over.
I think they already played there. Or were the Marlies in Binghamton 2 weeks ago?
No, the Marlies were in Binghamton this past week. That was when Ben Bishop's big game.
Yep.
No, I don't think the B-Sens are in town until well into the spring. So there's that. Yeah, but I'd have to look at the schedule to see, but I recall I don't think they're here till February.
That works.
I'd go down for it. That could be fun.
What, yeah. I miss Winterlude?
It's 3 weeks long. Doesn't matter. Besides, the canal will be closed and the ice sculptures will be melting. Exactly. That's what happens every
yeah. So it's a funny place to be a fan of any team that's not Toronto, with one exception. There are a surprising number of Habs fans here. Why I don't know. Well, I guess it's an old established team, and they're you get a lot of people who move around between Ontario and Quebec. The Western teams I find don't have much of a presence here in the Toronto area.
Must be the history, right? They're employing it. It's just probably things like. You're either a Leafs fan or not a Leafs fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would probably just revert to the Habs, especially when you're going back a couple of generations. Sens weren't around. That was the only
big rivalry, yeah.
Big rivalry there. Yep.
Now, I know this is a hockey podcast, but I'll digress for 1 minute. And don't you think it's appropriate that the NFL team that city loves and comes and hosts is the Buffalo Bills, which is pretty much a perennial disappointment NFL franchise?
Well, they're just fitting in with the city. You know, they're right up there with the soccer team and the baseball team and the hockey team.
Except the CFL team.
except the CFL team. Exactly.
I was actually at the Grey Cup parade yesterday. It was pretty cool. But you know what Bills stands for, right, in Buffalo Bills? Boy, I love losing Super Bowls.
Oh, I know who I'm using that one on.
Awesome. So, yeah, the Hockey Hall of Fame game. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about.
Yeah, well, as you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame stuff carried on this year, really regardless of the NHL lockout. And on Remembrance Day, which was the day before the big induction ceremonies, I was at the Hall of Fame Legends game, or that's what they called it, the old-timers game, the geezer game. I was at the Air Canada Centre downtown. First game of hockey, I think, that had been played at the ACC since April, I guess, because the Marlies play down the street. So it pitted Team Gilmore, a bunch of retired Leafs, against Team Trottier, a bunch of other retired players, and give you a sense of who was playing in that game. On Team Trottier, you had Pavel Bure, Paul Coffey, Dale Hawerchuk, Adam Oates, Joe Sakic, Steve Shutt, Brian Trottier, Dino Cicerelli. And on Team Gilmore, You had Doug Gilmore, Lanny McDonald, Joe Neuwendijk, Boris Alming, Daryl Sittler, Matt Sundin, Wendell Clark, Curtis Joseph was in net, Darcy Tucker. So you could really see what they were doing here, right? It was kind of
like all the Leafs versus non-Leafs.
Right? It was kind of like that. Yeah, yeah. There's almost no point in talking about the game itself because, you know, an old-timers game is like, you know, it's like an all-star game in a way. Like, nobody hits. The goalies barely move, right? It ends up being, you know, 72-66 or something like that. And, you know, and everyone's even slower because these guys are all oldish. But yep, there are a couple of things about this game and the atmosphere that were really kind of striking to me. First of all, as I said, the whole thing was kind of not so much a Legends game as it was kind of maybe pandering to Leaf fans is too strong a word. But, well, you know, sure, it was at the ACC, so you got to expect a certain amount of that. But, and I guess most of the people in that building, because they were Leaf fans, were oblivious to it. But, boy, when you're a fan of another club and they're doing and this is this what is supposed to be the celebration of the legends of the game, you sure notice it. The guy sitting beside me was a Habs fan, and he really felt it, too. We both said, come on, Darcy Tucker.
He's still on the Leafs payroll.
I know. You know, and I don't think I'm not sure anybody around me knew that they're paying him $1 million a year for another 2 years. So the guy beside me both looked at each other and said, on what planet other than planet Toronto is this guy a legend of hockey? Really? I don't want to turn this into a Darcy Tucker bashing session, but I really do think that when you're constructing it that way, there comes a point where you start to stretch the definition of the term legends. So that was one thing that struck me. The other thing now, as you probably know, the four guys who were inducted into the Hall this year were Adam Oates, Pavel Bure, the great Joe Sakic, and some guy named Mats something or other. I'd never heard of him. And here's what really struck me. Adam Oates and Pavel Bure both got, you know, a respectful amount of applause and cheers. And the volume went up when Joe Sakic came out and they introduced him.
Yep.
And then Matt Sundin comes out, and it is like a 30 or 40 second standing ovation. I just thought, you really?
Well, we would do the same for Alfie.
We would.
I mean, we've done the same for Alfie, and it wasn't even a Hall of Fame induction.
I know.
He's their hero.
He's their hero, and that's although he did leave. Remember, he did leave town under some pretty hard feeling circumstances.
Nope, that's all forgiven now. He's back.
Yeah, exactly. But but coming right after Joe Sakic, I'm thinking, wait a second here. 2-time Cup champion, right? Hero of the gold medal game against the U.S. Salt Lake Tournament MVP. He gets hooray, and Matt Sundin gets this thunderous standing applause. I just thought, okay, you know you're in Toronto.
Exactly. You're in Toronto. What are you going to do?
So it just felt like there was that just sort of encapsulated to me some of what goes on in the hockey scene here. There's just this sense that what happens in Toronto is what really matters. You sort of scratch your head and say, okay, I'm not sure you're paying attention to what's going on elsewhere in the league or elsewhere in the game, but whatever.
Center of the universe syndrome.
Yeah. But it was kind of cool to see guys like this on the ice. I don't know how long it's been since a guy like Sakic put on skates. The game kind of got it was what it was, and everyone in the building kind of knew it. And I will backtrack a little bit on what I've said. I don't want to make it sound like this was a Leafs only event, because there were some Sakic jerseys in the building, including a couple of Sakic Quebec jerseys, which was kind of neat, and a few Russian national jerseys, which I assume were Pavel Bure jerseys. So there was a sense that this wasn't just a Leafs only event, but there was just sort of this privileged this privileged place for Leafs in this event, which it was in Toronto, but I kind of felt it was a little bit out of touch with where the game and where that club specifically has been in the last 10 years, certainly. But the kind of thing you'd really only feel if you're a fan of another club sitting in the stands. So.
That's what you expect from Leaf fans, though. They're kind of out of touch, and they think they're the center of the universe. So fair enough. You mentioned right off the top that you want to talk about the 10 fight rule in the OHL. And I was wondering if you want to throw in a little bit of discussion about the mandatory suspension for headshots in the OHL as well, but we can get to that if we have time. But the 10 fight rule, go ahead and give the explanation for all the listeners.
There was a great article in the Globe, I guess it was on Saturday, about this. And if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It really was basically any player who fights more than 10 times gets an automatic 2-game suspension for each additional fight. And once he gets to 15 fights, the team gets a $1,000 fine for each additional fight. And any player gets an instigator after reaching 10 fights is suspended for 4 games. So it's according to the article, and I haven't seen these stats myself, but the stats they quoted say that fighting in the OHL is down about 20%, largely because of this. This season?
Okay.
This season, fighting across the board. I'm just looking for the quote here. Yeah, it's fights are 0.92 a game last season, down to 0.71 a game so far this season. I think that's, we'll see how it plays out over the course of the season, but I think it's a statistically significant event. And it's just interesting to me that, in a way, I was hesitant to bring this up because, you know, the debate over fighting in the game is so circular. You know, you think it's part of the game, you don't think it's part of the game, it has its place, or, you know, there's no way, you know, that debate never fully gets resolved. But it is interesting, though, that that the OHL tends to be the league that leads the way on reforms to how the game is reforms to how the game is played. You've got this. You've got, as you mentioned, the headshot rule. Visors are mandatory in the OHL, as I believe they are in the other two CHL leagues. And it's just interesting how they're willing to go places that the NHL just claims it's impossible to go because it'll ruin the game. I don't know about you. I think the OHL puts a perfectly good product on the ice. I don't see it really compromising the quality of what they do. But it'll just be really interesting. It just strikes me as a pretty bold experiment on the part of the OHL, and we'll really see where it goes.
But you know, with that, I really think you got it right with this, because bringing it down, granted, doesn't seem like much from 0.92 to 0.71 or whatever it is, but it does say, okay, you know what, maybe fighting should stay in the game, otherwise you might go back to stick swinging again. Mm-hmm. But it does have its place. And you're not just going to have those stage fights that everybody liked.
Yeah, and that's one point that this article from the Globe actually makes, is that it's not that fighting has disappeared from the game. The heavyweights are still out there, but what is happening is they're starting to pick their fights more carefully. So it's not that fighting has disappeared, but yeah, you're starting to be a little more careful about when you'll go and when you won't. And I think what'll happen is that this will sort of force the people who defend fighting as a way of, you know, protecting the stars and protecting the elite players. It'll really sort of force them to prove that, right? Because if there start to be some real consequences once you're past 10 fights, then you're going to, you know, save those fight chips or fight credits, as it were, for when you really want to do it, right? For when you really feel you need to do it and you really feel it needs to contribute to your team. What I hope this gets out of the game, and that's why I would love to see it come into other leagues, is get rid of that sort of nonsense where you have these guys, you know, the two heavyweights texting each other like a day or two ahead of time saying, yeah, where are we going to go? If there's one thing I would love to see disappear from the game, it's that.
The whole goon scenario.
Oh, God. Yeah. I would love to see that. But it's just going to be interesting to see how this plays into the broader discussion around fighting in the game, because I was really surprised when that OHA player, Don Sanderson, died after a fight 3 years ago, how little impact that had on the game, on the debate. I was really, I really would have expected that to have had more of an impact. And it was really shocking to me that it didn't. I don't know if you guys remember that.
No,
that was the one in the Toronto area, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was. Okay. He played for
Oshawa Pickering. Dunlops,
yeah, in a Triple A team, and his helmet came off during a fight, hit his head on the ice, and he passed away.
But the OHL did address that. The OHL addressed that with the rule that they put in, I think, 2 seasons ago now, where you have to keep your helmet on.
That's right.
If your helmet comes off in a fight, the fight is over right there.
I remember this one. Right. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But you know, do you recall? And, again, it's the OHL. Do you recall anybody else picking this up? Do you recall that making a ripple in the NHL? I don't.
No.
Nope.
So,
no,
but I mean, the OHL has always been out. Well, I don't want to say always, but at least in about the past 8 to 10 years, has been out in front with a lot of the rules that they implement. Whether it's the helmet has to stay on, the 10 fight rule, their mandatory suspension for headshots, because I'm an Ottawa 67s fan, and Sean Monahan, who's estimated to be or projected to be the top draft pick out of the OHL in the upcoming NHL draft, is in the middle of sitting for 10 games for an elbow to the head. And David Branch he's a little draconian, you might think, or you might say, but you know, it's cut down on this sort of thing. And whether it's the rule or, but you know, headshots or 10 fights, all sorts of things.
Yeah, and Monahan's somewhat of a star in the league too. Huge. Doesn't matter who you are, right?
Yep, exactly.
This is his draft year.
This is his draft year.
To go top 10 three. Or something like that?
Top three? Yeah.
No, you sit 10 games, that can affect your numbers.
Yeah. He's likely to go after Seth Jones from Portland, who's I can't remember. It's Jones, and there's one other guy who are estimated at 1-2, and I'm sure we'll have a listener tell us who the other one is. I can't remember. But it's somebody, and Seth Jones are kind of fighting it out for 1-2, and Monahan's expected to go 3, at least under the early projections. And he's a hell of a player. I've seen him play. But David Branch doesn't mess around.
Yep. You know,
these are the rules. That's it.
Well, it's another example of the OHL taking it very seriously, and it's not, these rules aren't interfering with the game yet. NHL, no, can't do that.
Yeah, they also just implemented no-touch icing, and I've been to 3 or 4 67s games so far this year. Man, does it speed it up.
Yep.
It doesn't hurt the game at all. It's just like, that's an icing, let's go. Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
Never been an issue when we're watching international. You don't ever go, oh, gee, you know.
Oh, well. I think one of the reasons you see this sort of stuff happening in the juniors and not in the pros is, well, that's what can happen when you don't have to collectively bargain anything, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's what happens when you don't have also I think the role of the general manager is quite different in the juniors. You don't sort of have this, you know, this committee of 30 that pretty much has the power to block anything. So it's a really different, you know, in all fairness, the dynamic in a bunch of pro teams, the dynamic in a professional league is going to be really, really different from the top down. So I think David Branch can run the OHL in a way that I'm not sure anybody really could run a professional league. But, you know, I also think he's... He has courage to take on the naysayers and say, oh no, can't do anything about headshots. Oh no, can't do anything about fighting. Well, you know, he's there's leadership anyway, and you know, we'll see whether all of these reforms have the beneficial effect that we think. And I'll admit, you know, when it comes to fighting, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel on this. I'm really of two minds on it, right? I mean, I think it's overdone. I hate the staged fights, but I think. You know, I hate watching guys circle and put up their, you know, very theatrically put up their dukes. I just hate that. But I got to admit, you know, when I'm at a game and a fight breaks out, am I sitting on my hands saying, oh, how awful? No, of course I'm not. I'm on my feet screaming for blood just like everybody else is.
Yep.
So, you know, I hate to admit that it is part of the game. I think that's really why I wanted to bring up this thing about this 10 fight rule, because I think it's going to put to the test just how much it really is part of the game, just how much it really is necessary to play the game with your fists.
Right. Yeah. Because I think the NHL's got that instigator rule, but that's not necessarily working because they rarely call the instigator. But no, I think you're right in regards to, like, we love the fights. And you have hugs and tugs fights that were at the start of the last year. Those, you didn't do much with it. But then, was it in the playoffs when Chris Neal was fighting a guy, stops in the middle of it, and then starts to, like, cheer on the fans and get them going? Mm-hmm. That was exciting. That was a lot of fun. Anyways, Boingy, it's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. It is a lot of fun, and you sure got to... A lot of different points of view there, and really, really happy to hear about the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. Hope we'll get to do this again at some point, and maybe we'll get to meet you gents face to face at some point.
Sounds
hope
good.
To do it.
All right, thanks again.
Cool. Okay, thank you. I've been married a long time ago.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
You know, it wasn't until Puddle Duck cleared me up that I actually understood what the words of that song was. It's actually saying, if I hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. I always thought it was just nonsense at the beginning, like, get out now, Joe. So, there you go. I learned something new.
I just tried to tune it out.
Ugh.
I just tried to ignore the whole thing and figured that the pain would soon be over. And just let it play along without paying too much attention to it. But now I know what the words are, and they'll probably be stuck in my head like an earworm tomorrow. Thanks. That's great. That's just what I needed. We heard recently that Jared Cowan was going to be out for likely the entire season because he's having hip surgery. Fortunately, it wasn't another knee surgery, but it is a hip surgery for was a tear in the labrum of his hip, which is an ugly injury. And he's likely gone for the entire season, presuming we have one. And presuming we have one, which I'm still hopeful, at least at some level, that we will. He was projected to be, I would think, in our top four, or certainly
yep. You know,
in the six defensemen who were icing on a regular basis. So presuming that it would be in no particular pairing, I'm just naming these names off. So Phillips, Gonchar, because they played together a lot last year. Mathot, Carlson, and Lundin. And where do we go from there? You know, who do we, if Cowan was going to be playing in that, in the third regular pairing, who are we going to put in there instead?
Is Gilroy still available?
Oh, no. we'll just stick Lundin out there alone.
But Gilroy might be
still available.
Is
there another one on contract?
I'm trying to think if there might be another one on contract. I'm convinced I'm forgetting one, but I can't think of who it is at the moment.
Borokop?
Well, he's on a two-way, I think.
Yep.
And he's certainly lighting it up in Bingo at the moment. He's who am I missing? No, it's just those six. Who? Sorry?
I'll look it up now. Well, you guys.
Well, I only see six. As far as Cap Geek, so if you take Cowan out of that, that's five. So that would be.
Was Cowan? Was he having a? I Cowan hear he was working out with Pascal Leclerc or something. What's going on?
Nice. No, he just. There hasn't been too much said that I've heard, at least, about where the injury actually happened. But it is, you know, requiring surgery and will take basically the entire season for it to heal. So the question is, who's going to fill that number five spot? Never mind, who's going to fill up six as well?
Is Kramer a forward or defense?
Kramer's a forward.
Okay, thought so.
Yeah, Cece's not ready yet, eh?
What's that? Cece? No.
Cody Cece? No.
No. Cece is he's struggling with the 67s. I mean, the 67s are struggling pretty badly, but that's because they're icing so many rookies this year. They had a game last weekend. I think it was the game in Guelph where they only had 16 forwards, and nine of them were rookies, or eight of them were rookies. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. They're struggling, but it's pretty obvious why they're struggling, because the team is really, really young. So CeCe, I don't even think that CeCe, I mean, this is just my opinion, which is worth about $1.25 in small change. I don't think CeCe's finishing the season with the 67s. I think he's probably going to get traded at some point this year for assets for future years, just like Tyler Grejovac, who's the other, and possibly even Sean Monahan. All three of them might get moved, but certainly the first two get moved away from the 67s. But as far as who might replace Cowan, I mean, down in Bingo, there's Borowiecki, who is leading the team in penalty minutes because he seems to get in a lot of scraps these days, but he's also a pretty effective defenseman. There's Eric Greiba, who's back from injury, who's, again, a big, very, I mean, both Borowiecki and Greiba are in the same sort of mold as Cowan. They're a big, solid defenseman. You know, not a lot of offense from these kind of guys, but, you know, the kind of guy who you want to be out there to shut somebody else down. And there's also Wierkosz and Claesson. Claesson's the Swede who came over this year, who's getting used to playing down there. I don't think he's ready for the NHL from what I've seen. And Wierkosz might be, but he's, I mean, he recovered from, he was the guy who took the puck in the throat last year.
Yeah, and he just hasn't been the same since.
Well, he's getting back to it, but it's going to take some time, I think, still. I don't know whether he's NHL ready or not yet. So
that was Benoit.
Benoit's the other question mark. He's pretty damn solid.
He's
actually,
been doing great.
What he is. Okay. Yeah, he's pretty damn solid, and he would certainly fit in pretty well. But he's also hired to be the veteran voice down in Binghamton. But if he's needed up here, he's needed up here. And they also, I mean, they have Luke Richardson as the coach down there, who's a defenseman, so they can certainly lean on him quite a bit. Okay. So, I mean, between those names...
I think he's also a smaller guy, too, right? Because when you're looking at Cowan's supposed to be a big body, a hitter...
A big bruiser, yeah.
Defenseman. Wierkosz, I know, is just offense.
Offense. Claesson is sort of a hybrid between the two, but he's more offense than defense overall. Right. I mean, he's an effective defenseman, but he's not a big body bruiser, Anton Volchenkov type, which... Cowan is, to a certain extent, as are Borowiecki and Greiba. So I figure one of them might get that spot. I mean, Lundin is a question mark. We don't know how he's going to work out either. So we could end up with Benoit and one of those four. Or Brian Murray could trade or pick up a UFA that's out there just to pick up another body. Who knows?
Do you guys remember Erik Karlsson? Remember how nice it was to watch him play?
It was wonderful to watch him play and occasionally really annoying. But
dude.
I know he won the Norris, but he still has defensive lapses. I call it like I see it.
Okay, do we need to go to a break here?
Are you going to beat me up on the break? You're going to take me over?
Seriously?
Moving along.
Oh, God. Everyone makes mistakes.
Absolutely.
He was with Kuba.
And Kuba looked pretty good with him.
Oh,
he puts
what
the lure.
You're saying Kuba
he
was
sets
good
the lure. He reels him in.
Are you pulling a stoolie right now?
Maybe.
I can't worked. Believe.
What studio are we in right now?
65.
Yeah.
Down the hall from 11. Anyway.
Send you off to Studio 17 if you really want.
Yeah. Live from Studio 17.
Yeah, cool. Me by myself, apparently. Anyway, we'll see how that works out. When the team gets on the ice, and I'm still saying when, not if, even though I feel a bit more if, we'll see how that shakes out. Quite frankly, I was looking forward to training camp as it was. Now, if there's sort of an abbreviated training camp, it'll be even more more intense and more interesting than it would have been had we had it in September when we were supposed to.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely have to bring up one of these guys to start.
Yeah.
I don't know who else is on a UFA. Guys that I couldn't like to see to replace just for the short term. Who was the big – what was his name? Sutton.
Andy
I would
Sutton?
Love to back, see Sutton back. Sorry?
He's still under contract with Edmonton, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but you can trade.
Are you an expert?
No.
I would love to see him back. Just love it. Another one that I think that would kind of fit in well would be... What is this? Yeah, I think Sutton's got 1 year left. Curtis Foster's another big body. And he's with Minnesota with 1 year left, too.
Pan likes the big bodies.
I do.
Well, as long as they play
physical. I'm not ashamed about it either.
As long as they play physical. You don't like the big, tall guys who don't do anything. You know, like Cuba.
But apparently you do, so.
It was very effective last year. It was one of the top plus-minus players in the NHL.
What did I think of this? I just called him Starfish. Anyway.
Anyway. All these guys are playing down in Bingo, which, if you haven't been following Bingo, they're kind of on a bit of a streak at the moment. 6-game win streak. Overall, they're 10-4-1-1. Their scoring is a little bizarre, though. Their scoring is by, you know, the old cliche of their scoring by committee, because the top point getter on the team, Tyler Eckford, he's a defenseman.
Yeah.
So with all the firepower down there with Zibad and Stone,
Silverberg.
No, top point getter on the team is a defenseman.
And Andre Benoit is
up there
right up there too, right? So
now they lead the league in goals by defensemen with 17. There's one other team that has 15. Other than that, there's no other team with 11 goals from the blue liners. So they're getting a lot of points and a lot of scoring from the blue line. But they also have an awful lot of players who have at least some points. There are 14 of them that have at least 5 in 16 games played, which isn't a lot, but 14 players with 5 points is actually a lot of points. And you know, some of them have, like Mark Stone, missed the first 6 games of the season, and he already has 5 points in 10 games. Not great, but not bad. They're certainly they were near the bottom of their division. Now they're in second place, and they're getting up close to the top. And they've been playing very well. Robin Lehner has been outstanding in goal, and Ben Bishop is getting up there. He had a couple of games that weren't so good, but he was getting over a case of the flu, at least for the first couple of them. So a bit of a mulligan on that, but even his numbers are pretty good.
I don't know if you noticed it on Twitter, the typical Sens fan fashion. Ben Bishop came in for one game and didn't do so hot, and they're just jumping all over him. And then, you know, he came back and played the Marlies and just shut him right out. So,
oh, he did.
Some things never change.
Yeah, he had something like 50 saves or close to 50 saves in the game against the Marlies, including several in the last couple of minutes. And they scored one goal in the last couple of minutes to make it 3-2, but he hung on for that win and played very well in that game.
You watching the games on the internet or listening on the team? Or
I'm listening to them more than anything, yeah. I watch them online once in a while, but I'm listening to them more than anything.
Yeah, it's an interesting broadcast. I do like Grady. But there's that one weird radio voice that keeps coming back, like, "You're now listening to VSAN's hockey."
Mr. Deep Voice. Yeah.
It's a little disturbing, but a
little creepy.
Yeah.
Little creepy. Yeah.
I can't do it, but when you hear it, you'll know.
My voice isn't deep enough to do that one. It's the same voice that actually does some of the ads for Monday Night Football for radio. It's this super, super deep voice, and it is a little like, ooh, okay, that's a little creepy. I don't think I want that person anywhere around my young children, that's for sure. for a while, Robin Lehner was not only doing well in goal, he was also second in penalty minutes on the team because he got into a bit of a scrap early in the season.
Yeah.
He's now 5th.
That was a great scrap. I love this kid. I cannot wait to see him up here.
It was a great scrap, except the team was up 5-0 in that game.
I know.
And they lost it.
I know.
Well, he definitely can't be blamed for that. He let 0 goals in.
Yes, and he also got himself tossed.
Does he drive a Hummer?
Does it break down on the side of the Queensway? Huh? Does he miss planes? Does he miss the team bus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Little peculiar. I've also noticed that Luke Richardson was juggling the lines a lot early in the season, but they've settled down, and the 3 Swedes aren't playing together a lot, but they seem to get put together for the second power play unit, at least occasionally. So you see Silverberg, Zibanejad, and Pettersson, all together. And it's like, ooh, that's a lot of Sweden, especially if they put Claesson on the blue line while they're out on the ice. And speaking of Claesson, he's actually been he was a little bit lost at the beginning of this season with the small ice and the, you know, physicality and so on. But there was an article, I think it was about 10 days ago, with Luke Richardson being quoted that he was very pleased with the progress that he's making. And he was one of the guys that Dan was talking about when we had him on last episode, episode before that, that he's definitely someone to keep an eye on as far as a future prospect for the big team, not just to be playing down in Bingo, because he's doing quite well down in Bingo and really adjusting to the North American game in a hurry, and looking pretty good while he's doing it. So lots of, if you need a hockey fix, Binghamton's definitely the place to get it. You can subscribe to the AHL feeds. You can find the games online on the radio, at least some of the time, if there's not something else that's preempting it. But it's good hockey. It really is. And it says you'll recognize an awful lot of the names from before.
Hey, speaking of hockey fixes, you went to the game in Cornwall.
I did. And it was that was a game, it was a charity game to assist, to raise funds for something called First Assist, which is a charity that raises money for equipment for First Nations kids, especially up in the far north, to be able to buy equipment to play hockey. And it was down in Cornwall at the Cornwall Civic Complex. And there were a lot of senators there as well as other NHLers. But I mean, there was Alfie sort of announced day before or day of that he was going. And that's why I decided I wanted to go. But it was also Chris Phillips, Chris Neal, Mark Mathot, Mark Mathot's brother Matt, Jesse Winchester was there. And so were Sean Donovan, Guillaume Latendresse, Peter Regan, Zach Smith, and a bunch of other NHLers, including Derek Brassard from Columbus,
yeah.
And a couple of Habs, both, well, the Gionta from Montreal and the one from New Jersey, and Josh Georges, and a couple of alumni as well. It was a big crowd of NHL players, and kind of like the game that that Boingy was talking about. There wasn't a lot of contact because there were only about two full lines for each team. So it wasn't a lot of contact, but there was a lot of skating. There were some really pretty pass plays going on, and it was actually a really nice sort of feel good experience because I was sitting within a couple of rows of the glass, and watching the players joking with each other from both teams was an experience I'm not used to, because at an NHL game, things are pretty serious. But these guys, it was kind of like a game of pond hockey in front of a crowd. They were having a lot of fun. They were laughing. They were pseudo hooking each other. It was actually a lot of fun to watch these grown men acting like 10-year-olds. It was hilarious. And between the first and, I mean, the biggest cheer, when the teams were introduced, the biggest cheer by far was for Daniel Alfredsson. There were a few people who tried to boo him, and they got completely drowned out by the people who were cheering for Alfie. Good job, Puddle Duck, because he was one of the ones who I'm sure was, because Puddle Duck was down there. I didn't get to meet him, unfortunately, but he was one of the people who I'm sure was leading the cheers for Alfie in his section. I was certainly leading them in mine. I was actually staggered by the number of, I mean, there were about 4,000 people there. I only spotted one Leafs jersey. I spotted two Detroit jerseys, and I must have seen a couple of hundred Senators jerseys. They outnumbered Montreal probably 5-1.
Well, nice.
I was completely shocked. No, I didn't wear mine because I won't wear it during the lockout. I was actually wearing a 1972 Team Canada Super Series jersey. Because, well, I wanted to wear a hockey jersey, but I didn't want to wear a Senators one because, well, there's a lockout going on, so I didn't want to support them.
Wait a second. You went to a hockey game and you wanted to wear a hockey jersey, but not for one of the teams playing?
Well, it wasn't a team playing. It was just there were members of that team that were playing there. The Senators weren't playing. It was just some Senators were there and players from other teams. So, yeah, no, I didn't want to wear a Senators jersey because there's a lockout going on, and I just like I don't wear their gear any other time. Anyway.
Trying to get you going there.
Nice try. It was between the first and second period, I think, was probably the most funny part of the entire evening, because six or seven of the players were out playing against a team of, I guess, somewhere between 10 and 12-year-olds from Cornwall. And from a face-off where Chris Neal was kind of, you know, pseudo-hooking somebody, and then he just sort of gave them a shove in the shoulder, and they fell over, and it was back and forth, and everybody's having a grand old time. And at the end of that 7-minute game, I think every single player on the other team went after Chris Neal and, you know, dropped their gloves and started, you know, pseudo-fighting with him, and he's, you know, picking them up and throwing them on top of other ones.
Laughing.
You know, everybody was laughing. The people on the stands, the players on the ice. I think Chris Neal must have had a sore face at the end of it, because he was smiling the entire night. He was signing autographs all night, because I happened to be sitting was right over top of where their dressing room was, where they would come in and out, and there were must have been 50 to 60 people every time trying to get autographs from Alfie, Chris Phillips, and Chris Neal. Occasionally somebody would ask for a Habs autograph, but by far it was a very, very Ottawa Senators centric crowd. Which I was kind of surprised. I figured Cornwall would be more in Montreal than that. I was pleasantly surprised. But it was a fantastic atmosphere. It really was. Just to watch these guys having fun and joking about hooking and, you know, joking about somebody being a diver and just a lot of fun. It was a very good experience. And I got to see, you know, the people who I really want to see play hockey, even if they're not in the arena where I want to see them and playing the game I want to see.
Did you stay afterwards? Like, I guess they signed autographs and everything afterwards?
Unfortunately, no. I had to get back to Ottawa because the friend who was with me starts work at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I had to get her back to Ottawa so that she could get to sleep. We got back to Ottawa at midnight as it was, and we didn't stay for the autograph section. So,
well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
A couple hours.
I know Puddle Duck stayed and,
yeah, actually, we do have an email from Puddle Duck, and he was here, when was it? A couple weekends ago, I guess. A
couple weeks ago, yeah.
Or, yep. He had a little mini get-together at the Big Rig, and he sent a long email, and I think what I'll do, instead of reading it, kind of paraphrase that conversation. He did, there's a funny story here, and you heard at the beginning of our show, kind of the intro from Gord Wilson. And the story he shared with us in person, he went to the washroom, and of course he saw Gord Wilson there with his son, kind of waited for him afterwards to come out. And he said, aren't you, you're Dean Brown, right? And of course, Gord Wilson's like, no, the other guy, and started walking away. So anyway, he got it in time, and that's kind of where this the kind of clip came from.
Hi, this is Gord Wilson, and you're listening to the Sens Call-Ups.
Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
So, thank you, Puddle Duck.
I love it.
That's awesome. The story's almost as good as the clip.
Yeah. He's a good sport, Gord, for playing along with that. I'm sure you're probably annoyed at this guy calling you Dean Brown, but good stuff.
Exactly.
But Puddle Duck was describing after the game, like, he did stay around and went through the line and got, you know, met people. And I guess, you know, he did meet Mark Mathot and Chris Neal, and he got to Chris Phillips, you know, and said hello. And he went of his way to say these guys are really friendly. And Chris Phillips is like, well, now that I know you on a first base basis, so I mean, I get free beer at the Big Rig. And of course, I think at that point, all the guys around him, like Mark and Chris Neal, and started looking at him like, yeah. And I guess the story goes that Chris Phillips kind of looked at him and said, look what you started. You know, so they're all good sports. And, you know, he went on to describe when he eventually got to Alfredson, if I could maybe just jump to his words, you know, he says, in awe of the man, and said he looked very tired. And it really saw it in his face. And this was right around that time where he had the, you know, that article in the paper about him being kind of bitter and angry and pessimistic about the state of the lockout. And that's exactly the timing of this Cornwall event, right? And he said he could see that in his face. But he was polite and he signed his autographs and asked if he joined the game, and he got a picture with him. But the really kind of heart-catching story, and I'm going to read his words. This is Puddle Duck's word. As I was stepping away, the teenager and mom in line behind me walked up, and I noticed that this kid had tears in his eyes and was just staring at Alfie, trembling. And his mom quietly said to Alfie, you're his hero, Alfie. And I guess Alfie just smiled, and his whole demeanor changed completely. And he started speaking to the kid, and that's the kind of effect this guy has on people. And I thought it was pretty touching that, you know, this little kid, you know, couldn't couldn't even say anything in front of him. So kind of neat little story. Kind of funny that Puddle Duck kind of got caught for words trying to talk to him. And here he is joking with Chris Phillips and everybody else. But neat story. And thanks for the clip. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, outstanding. I wish I'd been able to stay for that. But Puddle Duck, thanks for not only for the story. I mean, that's the story in and of itself is fantastic. But thanks for getting that that clip from Gord Wilson as well. Excuse me. Pan.
Yep.
I just want to make sure you're still there. I haven't heard you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was actually texting. It's just like Stooley.
Way to go, Stooley. Okay, good one.
Yep. Bing.
Go
ahead.
I was going to quickly cover, just wanted to take a quick moment or two because this is going on pretty long. Talk about some of the prospects that we have that aren't playing in Binghamton yet. I know we talked about Cody Ceci already. He's playing pretty well, but the whole team itself is struggling, so his numbers aren't probably quite as good, or he doesn't look quite as good as he might have otherwise. Watching the 67s, that whole team is struggling. So to look at Cody Ceci and go, well, it's all his fault, I think would be, he's struggling as much as the rest of the team. It's a collective thing more than anything else. But some of the other prospects that we have out there that are still playing in either, at CHL level, Matt Pumple is playing in Kitchener. He's got 21 goals so far, which is 30% of the goals scored by Kitchener overall. And a couple of the other players that are of interest would be the goalies that Dan was talking about in our last episode, Chris Dreider in Calgary and François Brassard in Quebec City.
These goalies are incredible.
They've got some wickedly good numbers, don't they? Wickedly good.
Oh. Are they going to be on the junior team for the World Championships?
I don't know. There was some talk. I was catching a little bit of World Junior talk with Bob McKenzie earlier today when he was taking questions from a few people about certain players. I didn't see Dreider or Brassard mentioned, but I wasn't watching really, really closely, unfortunately. Both of them have, up to the time of this recording, have played 19 games. They both have 14 wins. They both have goals against average somewhere between 2.25 and 2.5. And they both have save percentages somewhere between 900 and 925, which in junior numbers is...
That's fantastic.
Insane. Phenomenal. Insane. Yeah. So for everyone saying, oh, well, Ottawa's only got one goalie in their system and that, other than Robin Leonard.
We've got way too many.
Yeah, we've got quite a few that we can choose from.
That's going to be quite the goalie controversies. Would these guys stay in the CHL next year? Or would both of them get promoted up to Bingo?
I can't remember how old each of them are, to be honest. I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
I think they're both drafted this year. But do you leave them there or do you move them up if they're progressing to this level?
It depends on what the situation in Binghamton is next year. If we can leave them in the OHL, leave them in the OHL, because Binghamton, depending on what happens next year with Bishop and Anderson and Leonard, depending on where those three names fall out, do you really want to put a 19-year-old? Well, we've done it with Leonard. I was going to say, do we want to put a 19-year-old into the AHL? We did it with an 18-year-old. So yeah, could be done.
That'll be interesting, though, because the other thing is Bishop's a UFA at the end of this year.
That's right.
He's going to be signing one way somewhere.
Exactly. So whether it's here or somewhere else.
Yeah, and then if you keep them in Ottawa, then that means Leonard's back to Bingo next year again.
Yeah, hard to say.
Or do you move out Andy?
Yeah, hard to say.
Brain fart here, guys. Can you remind me? They're not, because there's not a season right on right now, is that year being burned?
The year's burned.
Okay.
The year's burned as far as contracts.
So if there is no season this year, Ben Bishop is UFA.
Ben Bishop has gone like Gonchar.
Yep.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, exactly. Gonchar's another one that would be gone at the end of this year. For sure.
So we got a Gonchar jersey to give away here?
If we were trying to find another zinger of a jersey, wouldn't a Kubo one be more appropriate than a Gonchar one?
No, he's your hero, though. So.
Are you willing to give that up?
I don't own one. The only jerseys I own with names on the back belong to Daniel Alfredson. And I have two. I just want to quickly touch on those prospects, because we do it for a team that everyone was saying has no prospects. You know, oh, gee, the lard is a little bare, the cupboard's not too full. There was an article that came out in September that ranked Ottawa there were two of them. One said 5 and one said 3, as far as how good our prospect system, you know, our prospects are, and how our junior, you know, our feeder system are to the big team. One was 5 and one was 3, as far as in the league.
That's pretty good. And that seems to be a lot more on pace in the power rankings.
Yeah. We've got nothing on that Leaf Nation, man.
Well, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, we've got two goalies, Dreider and Brassard. We've got two goal scorers in Stefan Nason and Matt Pumple. We've got Cody Ceci. Technically, we still have the rights to Nikita Filatov. Whatever.
Yeah, nope. He's not a prospect.
No, that would be a good jersey.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to him playing up here. Man, it was a disappointment.
It was a disappointment, but it was a good move by Murray. It was a third round pick.
It was worth it.
Totally worth it.
I just wish it would have panned out better.
Yeah, exactly. But what can you do?
Yeah.
Didn't pan out.
Oh, that's terrible.
Hey.
What do you guys think about, just quickly, I don't know if you've seen what the seating chart looks like in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn for hockey, where the Islanders are moving to. Have you seen this? There's no first bowl seating inside the blue line in one end.
Oh, I didn't see that.
No.
There's basically none. The building was designed for basketball, so to put a hockey surface in there, it only seats, I think it's 14-5. And there's just pitiful amounts of first bowl seating in one end if there's a hockey surface in there.
So it's kind of like the old 67s arena, Civic? Kind of like
that?
Well,
that's a side. Okay. No, I mean an end.
Oh, kind of like one end is just a wall.
So like behind the goalie?
Yeah.
It's just a wall sort of? Or?
Well, because of the way I saw one picture of it, and the way that the ice surface fits in, they have to eliminate a lot of the first bowl seating.
Okay.
To be able to fit an ice surface in, because it's much bigger than a basketball court. So, okay. You know, to get seats at the glass, you're almost going to be at the top of the glass, not the bottom of it. It's pathetic.
Oh, really? That's going to look real weird.
It sounds funny, but you know what comes to mind is it's got a little bit of character too.
Well,
the 14,500, I mean, surely they'll do better in Brooklyn.
Before or after the seat reduction? Is that after the seat reduction?
That's after it. That's how much it'll seat for hockey.
Because Winnipeg's a smaller one, too. It's like 16, right?
16, yeah. But Winnipeg will fill their building. I'm not convinced the Islanders are going to fill the Barclays Center, except when they're playing the Rangers.
They might if they're over in Brooklyn, though. Because you don't have to drive to get there. Well, there's probably some easier transit to get there.
It seems to be about the same, I guess, distance.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's quite close.
So it's not just the other side of the bridge, then.
No,
but it is on.
80
it is on.
Kilometers.
Oh, jeez,
I can't remember how much.
It's pretty close. It is on. Yeah, it's on a subway line.
Oh,
okay.
That might help it.
Yeah,
and that's more westbound too, right?
Say again. What do you mean?
That's more. It's more west than Long Island, obviously.
Well, it's not nearly as far out onto Long Island as the old arena. No, it's much closer to New York City. Much closer.
So then when you've got like Philly and Pittsburgh and teams like that going in, their fans can drive over, and that saves them a lot of time too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be closer for teams like that as well. Yep, for sure.
So that might work out. Well, they'll at least be able to sell out the 15,000. And this is New York City, right? It's the biggest city in the world. You should be able to fill these things, but
we hope so.
That Atlanta is also the same size as Toronto. So.
Touche.
The one thing with all these, you know, new arenas, and of course they're built for, maximum capacity and multifunction. They do all end up looking the same. So, maybe it's a throwback to the old character of, you know, like the Forum versus the Gardens versus this and that. And so, I don't know. Be neat to see. I'm sure it'll still be funny.
I don't think they can do any worse than they're doing now.
No.
So, you know, that'll work out that way. But it's going to look a little odd on TV, I think. But it might change. We'll see. We had we've already read, I think, all of our emails. Oh no, we have one more email, don't we? Ben, you have another email to read.
Yep, we do. This one's from our good old friend Russell.
Oh, okay.
Russell.
It says, subject question for Penn. Hey, Penn, just a question. Do Asians have the same feelings when they get behind the wheels of a car as I do when I get up on the dance floor? Like, I just shouldn't be doing this? Just saying, Russell. Hey, Russell. You!
Nice. No hatred God. Going on there.
Damn.
No hatred there.
No. Nope. So just thought I'd share that.
Actually, we do have a real email from Russell, though.
Do we?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. You'll have to read it.
I can. Shall I read it?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Hey, Darcy Tuckers. Thought I'd take some time out of my retirement to drop you diffuses a line. First off, congrats on somehow filling up a CD of hockey talk when there's really nothing to talk about. Yeah, we're pretty good at that. It does a serviceable job keeping my eyes open on the drive to work. Oh, this is where this driving comment's coming from.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
In regards to Dan in Port he must join this pod thing network and put his own show. Great input on the last episode. Dan, step away from the and start recording. Man, self-censoring is hard. As for discussion about relocating teams expansion, I always get a kick out of the idea that there's so many markets out there that can sustain an NHL team that the league can afford to save this or that city for expansion. Yes, we all know that another team in Southern Ontario, Quebec, etc. would bring a big expansion dollars, but that means a struggling franchise must relocate to another weaker market. How many cities does Butthead think are out there that will support a franchise? Idiot. Well, Buttman and idiot kind of go together anyways. By the way, I can't think of a worse thing to happen to this league than another round of expansion. Oh, yes, I can. Another lockout. Stooley doesn't talk to me anymore. Cardinal needs to be drunk every show now. Right, Cardinal? Cardinal. Yep. Exactly. Take care. Study hard, kids, or you may end up playing for the Leafs. Russell, retired and wearing party socks. Yeah. Well, thanks for touching in, Russell. We've got to get you on the show again.
Yeah, we'll have to get those guys in on some future episode.
And as far as Stooley not talking to you anymore, you need to get together for one of those ghost burritos at Mucho Burrito.
They were good. They were a little warm. They were good.
I've had a couple now, and yeah. I must say they're pretty good.
Heat's intense, but it's still flavorful. So, yeah, ghost pepper burritos at Mucho Burrito, not for the faint of stomach.
No,
but very tasty. Indeed.
And by the way, for anyone who wants to go out and try that, and they do have this down in the Mucho Burritos down in GTA as well, it's not just hot for the sake of being hot. It's actually, they get that sweet hot sauce in there too. So it's actually very, like you want to keep eating it too. So I know when I did it, I had like the jug of milk and the jug of water, and I went through both of them. And this is the full intensity one. You can order it as you want, but you know, you always have to try the hottest one first. So,
yeah, why go for wimpy when there's something better?
Yeah, have you tried one of these, Pan?
No, I just can't eat. I cannot eat spicy at all.
Oh, really?
Well, but you're Asian.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Asians eat spicy food.
That's Indian. I'm Chinese.
Well, there's a difference. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
All those white people look the same.
Okay, I'm not wearing white and black. I'm not the referee between you two. If it's on, it's on. I'm standing back and watching. I'll just have another beer and watch you two go at it. I don't have an email. I got a quick tweet to cover.
Sure.
We had a tweet from Nicholas who said, instead of sending an email, I'll just send a short tweet. This lockout is making me lose my faith in hockey. It's awful. # end the lockout. I think that sums up what probably everybody feels or most people feel these days. And kind of the same way I feel about it. Just, you know, just get it over with. There's no reason to... That's it. Just get it over with.
Are we done?
Did I just get snappy or what?
See, Cardinal, now you know what it feels like.
Okay.
Something else, and actually, Kanaki and you and I have got to talk about this. I still have the old episodes.
So, guys,
okay, so it may be a while, Groundhog, till you get those.
Listeners, if you want to hear the old episodes, just hook up with Pan. Wait a second, what did I just say?
On that note,
I'll take it.
On that note,
yeah. So we'll try to figure that out because I got no tech savviness at all. So yeah. we'll keep you up to date on that. Also, when I picked up those episodes from Shredder, he mentioned other people were interested in doing their own podcast, but just no one was really worried or that people were nervous about it and didn't want to sound like an idiot. Well, you've got the three of us on
like
here,
us.
So
I was gonna say
you can't really do that much worse.
Exactly. There's if you got something to say, just get out there and say it. It's not like we're any professional or anything like that. We sound like idiots all the time.
Especially like when you say you like Uba.
Yeah, like that pregnant pause right there. Any final thoughts, guys? I think we've gone on long enough.
It's 3 hours.
Well, by the time Canuck gets it edited down, it'll be about 85 minutes. And everybody who's listening to this will be going, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I think I'm done.
Okay. There are still you can still post in the Sens Underground forums. There have been a couple of game threads during the Binghamton Senators game. So if you're listening to them on the radio or watching them on the internet, drop by the forums. There's probably a thread which you can talk about what's going on there. You can still email us at podcast@senscallups.com. You can also tweet us at senscallups. Always love getting something, whether it's email or just a tweet, people's opinions, thoughts, whatever. It's always fun to hear from you.
How many followers are we up to?
350? Last I checked. Yeah.
Yep.
So we're getting there. And I think they're all real people, too. They're not just bots. Because their incoming stream seems to be pretty full. Till next time, gents, this has been fun. We got to start doing this more than once every lockout. Because it's been too long since the last one. But until next time, I'm Cardinal on behalf of Pan and Canuck. Thanks for joining us. Please send us your thoughts. And we'll talk to you down the road.
See ya.
Later.
Know what I thought was the earliest sign to me that this was going to go to hell was back in, I guess it was January or February, when the union torpedoed the realignment. I remember thinking, good God, why did they do that? Because they didn't get consulted with enough notice? No, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because that realignment, it wasn't perfect, but it was better than that stupid system they have now, I think. And it's that there's no reason why the union would have pulled the plug except if it was a shot across Bettman's bow. It was a political move. There was no really good functional operational reason to do that. And I remember when Fair did that, I thought, oh boy, this really is going to go bad in the fall, isn't it? And it did. But I just remember seeing that thinking, oh, it's too bad. That realignment would have been interesting.
More brains.
Now Lucasfilm, they sold Star Wars to Disney, right? So all the jokes now, of course, are, Disney with their musicals. It'll be Chewbacca singing When You Wish Upon a Death Star.
That'd be very solid.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Bad feeling about this. That's a good Star Wars quote right there. Well done. Well done.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, I got a pretty good feeling about this.
Okay.
If I could have a beer with Alfie and bask in a golden god's manly glow, I'd likely take him over to Big Rig's, 'cause that's where the Sens all seem to like to go. It'd likely take a while to get him talking, 'cause I know at heart he's a quiet man. But once he starts, I'll just stay silent, listening till I get the chance to ask, how did you come to be the player that you are to me? Do you feel love still for this game? And when the crowds all chant your name, do you know how much this city feels the same? I'd tell everyone, but no one would believe me if I could have a beer with Alfie. If I could have a beer with Alfie, I'd ask what it's like to hold Olympic gold. Does he think this team will do as well without him? And what was up with that Heatley asshole? How did you come to be the player that you are to me? Is it hard being hot to some and being everything to everyone? Do you know that we appreciate all you've done? I'd tell everyone, but no one would believe me if I could have a beer with Alfie. He could only stay a while before he headed out to his truck, but be worth it all just to hear Alfie say that the Leafs still suck. Do you know that you'll always be the captain of the Sens to me? You've been there from the start, you've always done your part, and your legacy will live on in our hearts. I'd tell everyone, but no one would believe me if I could have a beer with Alfie. I'd record a clip so the Sens call-ups don't kill me if I could have a beer with Alfie. Oh, Captain, my captain, thanks, Alfie, for everything.
Adios, then he waddled away, waddle.